Today, I talk with Zan Gillies, an award-winning screenwriter and cinematographer based out of D.C., who is best known for his work on Last Strike, Kringle Time, and Bell Canyon. Please welcome Zan to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Alex. This is awesome.
The first question I really had was, like, where did you begin with something as complex as, like, writing a screenplay, something as big as that?
I feel like when it comes down to it, in my mind, a screenplay should just start with whatever you're interested in, you know? So, like, there's always something, some random thing that you'll run into in real life or some emotion that you experience or something that you're just like, I'm interested by this, or I want to tease this out, or I want to explore this or something. That then, as long as you've got that as the core of a screenplay, then you can build out from there really easily.
Right.
And as long as you've got that, then you've got an interesting story. I feel like the problem with the way that you get uninteresting or bad screenplays is just starting from a perspective of like, I want to write a screenplay and I don't care what it's about, you know, which obviously we all do at some point,
right.
but you have to have some emotional core to it. That always really helps me to kind of like keep things focused. And, you know, when it's a kind of a larger story or larger world or something like that, as long as you've got an emotional core to it.
So when you're writing a screenplay, you're obviously writing, a big part of that is like writing characters, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're writing characters, how do you create that like emotional connection between those watching the film and the protagonist in the film?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question. Cause like, I don't know. I mean, I think that's the thing that I think is really fun about screenwriting is having, you know, however much, half an hour or 2 hours or something like that, whatever your span of film is, and saying, all right, I'm going to make you care about someone that there's no reason for you to care about. Like, you know, you've already got enough stuff in your life. I'm going to put more stuff at you to then, like, you know, have to care. Obviously there's a level of bonding that you have to kind of establish with your protagonist in order to get people to care about it, because nobody really wants to, you know? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different, kind of how to things about it. Like, I mean, like Blake Snyder's, Save the Cat, you know, where it's just kind of, he says very clearly, like, all right, have your protagonist essentially save a cat in the first 5 pages so that people care about him, which is obviously a very simplistic way of kind of thinking about establishing a protagonist. Yeah, I mean, well, I feel like when it comes down to it, human beings are very simple. You know, we're very straightforward creatures, and we only kind of, you know, we have fear and love, and that's kind of it, you know? And we get, no matter what the time period is, no matter who we are or where we are, we're all going through the same shit, you know.
Right.
Can I say shit?
Yeah, that, I don't
okay.
care.
I did, so. You know, yeah, we're all going through the same shit in life. And so as long as you, again, it comes back to kind of that emotional core, you know. I think the reason that someone like, you know, something like Shakespeare, the reason that we're still doing Shakespeare today is not just that he was a good writer. Obviously, he was a very good writer, but he wrote about people and he knew human beings, you know. And that's the reason that we're still fascinated by those plays and by those characters, is because it's not just about a king or a, you know, a prince or whatever. It's about an actual human being going through something that we identify with. You know, the fact that I can look at Hamlet or Prince Hal or something like that in the year 2020 and go like, oh yeah, I get that. Yeah, I get that feeling of angst or you know, or whatever, you know, whatever they're going through. I think as long as you, I think that's the core of bonding your audience with the protagonist, is literally just saying like, we're all in this together. Here's a thing. Here's a feeling. And let's you get this feeling because human beings are not that complicated.
Right.
So let's just play that out. You know.
So you basically create a literal connection through, you would say, through the film by putting the viewer in the protagonist's footsteps or feet. I don't know what
feet, yeah, in the foot feet of the protagonist. I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, the you know, I think that the thing that I think is fun about screenwriting is, and the reason why, like, you know, at stuff like this, why, you know, when they say, like, what do you want to teach a workshop about, you know, it's like screenwriting thing, like, is the most fun. Is finding those lines of how can you make the audience go back. I think that, you know, one of the cool things about screenwriting, storytelling in general, is the ability to kind of change minds. And I think that the process of making people care about the protagonist, about your protagonist, in a way that you have to care about the person, in the main character in the film, or else why you're watching the film, you know? And I think that that process, you know, human beings are naturally empathetic creatures. So like there's a level in which, you know, you don't want to watch someone fail. But the process of attaching people to a character and then exploring the good and bad sides of that character once you've bonded with that character, I think is to me, I feel like the power of screenwriting, or the power of storytelling, of telling a story and saying, all right, I'm gonna make you care about something that you maybe you're afraid of caring about, or that, you know, I'm gonna make you explore a part of your personality that you feel weird about. I mean, like something like Breaking Bad, where, you know, it's always like the difference to me. I never really got into House of Cards.
I love it.
Really?
It's so, I've been binge watching it recently.
Really? Okay.
Don't tell my mom, but it's so good. I don't know. I just feel like the writing on that is great from the perspective of, and maybe this is more of a director's touch or a scriptwriter's touch, but the idea that the character can talk to the straight to the audience,
right,
is pretty fascinating.
Kind of Richard III kind of thing. I think the weird thing about House of Cards is like I completely agree that it's a very well shot, very well written, very well acted. Like,
right,
there's everything is good about it. You know, like there's a lot that's really good about it and really compelling. But the thing, you know, and I watched, I think, the first three seasons, and the thing that always kind of bothered me about it was, I was like, I don't really care if these people succeed, because I don't really want them to succeed, and
right,
I don't really, you know, like,
because they're evil people.
They're bad people, and they're very upfront about the fact that they're bad people. You know,
right,
like it feels like the plot devices in it, and the kind of like the machinations and all of the Machiavellian kind of like stuff in there is interesting to watch.
Right.
But like, you know, as opposed to, but literally, like, I mean, they did a, I assume this was an intentional thing. I'm not sure.
Right.
They literally did the opposite of a save the cat moment in the opening scene where
he kills the dog.
Yeah, they have a kill the dog moment, which is like, all
it's
right,
like,
this
what
is what
are
this
you
is
doing?
Gonna be. Yeah. Which is, you know, which is interesting. It's a very bold move. It's a very interesting challenge to then make you bond with this character. But I don't know, that really killed it for me. The fact that I was like, I just don't give a shit about this
guy,
you know? And as opposed to something like Breaking Bad, where they don't start with him as Mr. Chips, or they don't start with him as Scarface, they start with him as Mr. Chips, you know, so that you care about him. They bond you with him as a human being, so that way, by the time he's become this evil drug lord, it makes you kind of like re-examine yourself, because you're like, why do I want this guy to succeed? Like, I don't want him to fail. He's poisoning children, and like, I, you know, and I'm kind of okay with it,
right,
you know,
right,
because because there's a part of me that's like, oh yeah, you know. So,
right,
so I think that's the thing that I think is really interesting about bonding the audience with the protagonist, and why it always feels like a cop out to me to have you know, the people who say like, oh, I just, you know, likable characters are passe, you know, like I don't want a likable protagonist.
Right.
I mean, yeah, you don't, it doesn't need to be a straight up, you know, squeaky clean. Obviously you gotta have something wrong with the character. You've gotta have, you know, some tragic flaw or something,
mental or physical.
There's gotta be something to explore. But it feels like such a cop out to me and I've, you know, heard people say this and they're like, okay, well, no, I don't care. I don't care if people don't like the main character, cause you know, he's supposed to be an unlikable protagonist.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, well, that's easier to do. It's so much easier to make people not care about somebody.
Right.
You know,
you can write a romantic comedy and make everybody hate that person.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like, you know, it's to make people care about somebody and then twist that is so much harder to do than to just go, all right, well, I'm just, you know, he's just a bad person, he's an unlikable person, you know. You look at something like Joker that like
that's a great movie.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating movie. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there. I mean, there's a lot of fascinating things about Joker, but again it has that, you know, it doesn't start out saying like, and everybody, especially like the property that it's coming from, everybody loves the Joker. It's you know, going, it's starting you out with like, here's a character that is well known and
he's
well
meant to
loved,
be loved
by a
right?
lot of people. Yeah. And so like they could just kind of roll with that and go like, yeah, let's watch the Joker fuck some shit up. Like, that sounds great. But they don't do that. You know, they pull back and they actually kind of like, they make you at least pity him, you know? Like they don't necessarily, like, there's no point in that movie where you're like, oh yeah, this is a guy I want to have a beer with, but like, you feel bad for him, you know? So that then by the time that he becomes this villain, it is kind of terrifying that like, there's a moment inside you where you go like, oh, he succeeded, good. And then you're like, oh God, oh fuck, what does that say about me?
Like, that, you know? Kills like 50 people.
Right, yeah. And that in my mind, you know, like, you know, regardless of the fact that, you know, kind of, yeah, there are elements of it that play out as a kind of like Scorsese light,
right,
you know,
yeah,
like remix,
sure,
kind of thing, which is fair. But it does, you know, that those questions and those elements, especially in the current societal landscape right now, I feel like are made that movie worth seeing in my mind,
right.
Regardless of all the other questions that it brings up, but.
I do think there's obviously going to be, through writers and through directors, there's always going to be an influence from other films.
Mm-hmm.
And just because one film is like a Scorsese film,
mm-hmm,
doesn't mean that it's necessarily copying it.
Right.
I think it was just as hard to write, probably,
mm-hmm,
as any other original
film. Yeah, yeah. I think it's interesting. There's definitely like that line there of like, okay, when does too much homage become, when does homage become theft, I guess, you know? Or not necessarily theft, but just kind of like rehashing, you know?
Right.
It's interesting. And I definitely felt it much more in, as much as I like Joker, I felt it much more. I remember I saw Joker and then The Lighthouse in quick succession.
Right.
Like, and I remember thinking it was interesting that in Joker it felt like, it did feel like I was watching Taxi Driver again, you know, like just kind of felt like, okay, he's going to kill someone at the end. Yeah. You know, we're going through this whole kind of like, all right, it's Taxi Driver, it's King Comedy. It's, you know, all right. You know, I get this world that we're living in, as opposed to The Lighthouse where like it starts out and you feel these homages, you go like, oh, okay. Like it's kind of, you know, Seventh Seal-esque, you know, you've got some Bergman, you've got, you know, these various other kind of like visual references and stuff like that in there. But then, with The Lighthouse, by the time Act Two started, I was like, now I'm watching something new, you know,
right.
Like now it feels like you're kind of like building on those visual references to set the parameters in the audience's mind and then going, all right, now we're going somewhere new. Like now we're going to build from that, you know? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question. Obviously there's nothing new under the sun and everyone steals from everyone. I mean, talking about Shakespeare stole from everybody. That was all he did. He didn't write, well, he wrote two original plots in his life and they both suck, but
I think one interesting thing to think about, especially with House of Cards, and I would like to hear your opinion on this as like a screenwriter too, is that maybe it's meant to be an homage to the idea that people in the political workforce are not the kind of people who you want to connect with.
Yeah,
and maybe that's the point of
right.
writing the characters that way. Maybe they're trying to make them...
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say realistic because I don't know a ton of people in that that high of like a political spectrum, but maybe that was the idea.
Right.
And maybe they weren't trying to make them relatable.
Yeah.
But that's kind of weird to think. I mean, I guess Zoe is kind of relatable, right?
Which, oh, Zoe was Kate Mara.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, that's the other thing. Like, yeah, you get a relatable character that you start to care about, and then they're like, push him in front of a train. Sorry, spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't. Or wait, how far have you gotten into it? Did I just spoil that for you? Oh, my. Oh,
maybe,
shit.
But that's okay.
Oh, no. Oh, I feel so bad. Oh,
it's okay. I'll probably forget it anyway. So.
Okay, good. Oh, no, I feel a little bad. I'm sorry. I forgot that you hadn't finished it. Well, it's still a very surprising moment, even if you do know what's coming. But it's interesting. I mean, I can see that rationale. I feel like that, you know, makes sense in terms of saying, like, we're looking at these very, these people who don't really, these essentially sociopaths, like we're looking at a society of sociopaths who only care about power. But again, though, I feel like to say that it still kind of feels like a cop out to me to do that, you know, like
it has a very professional feeling to it. And I think the reason it has that is because the characters aren't relatable.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives it a very professional feeling because there are films that are very low budget that are. They're like very low budget films, and they have great cinematics, they have great lighting, everything, and they have super relatable characters, and they don't feel very, they have like just as good of lighting as House of Cards, and just as good of acting as House of Cards, but they don't feel as professional, they feel more relatable,
right?
And you can relate to those characters. Maybe part of that's just a budget thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible.
Right.
I do feel like, especially in some of the new trends with, like, superhero films, there's a big trend with that, which is obviously a big debate.
With the, like...
Like, Marvel films and all that. I don't feel like those are very relatable to the point that a short can be. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of low-budget shorts are a lot more relatable than giant Disney productions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Star Wars and things like that. Like, I don't relate to Rey... As much as I relate to, I can't really think of a specific character, but you know what I mean.
Right, yeah. It's interesting. I would actually say, I mean, I agree with, well, yeah, I think the new Star Wars trilogy is a whole other question of weird choices in screenwriting and clunky plot stuff. You know, as good as those characters are at their cores, I feel like my biggest problem with that trilogy was the fact that it felt like they started out with some great characters and then they just didn't know what to do with them, you know, and they didn't really have a plan
Have you seen the new one?
Rise of Skywalker, yeah.
Is it Rise? Yeah, Rise of Skywalker.
The last one, yeah.
I feel like that was the most jumbly one of all of them. I did not understand, the Kylo Ren, Rey kiss thing. I felt like they really wrote those characters. I felt they were writing the characters right with Rey and Finn ending up together.
Right.
And then they kind of destroyed that.
Yeah. Talking about films written by committee. I mean, that film literally was
just like voting.
Yeah. I mean, well, and like, you know, various, but there were, I think I heard like 3-4 different cuts of that film, you know, like it, I heard somewhere, I don't know if this is true, but I'll say it on your podcast. So, but I'm not entirely sure if it's true or not. I heard at some point that George Lucas came in and did reshoots and then did a cut, you know, and then they were like, well, we're not going to do this because you're George Lucas. Colin Trevorrow dropping out, you know, like halfway through and J.J. Abrams coming in and tacking together, you know, everybody wanted a different thing. Yeah. I mean, it's so evident in the final product, how many different cooks there were in the kitchen for that one. But I think it's interesting, you know, that you mentioned Marvel movies, because I actually feel like the thing that I actually think that Marvel movies do really well is bonding bonding people to these characters in insane situations. You know, the fact that, like, obviously, like, it's all over the top. It's all very, like, over dramatized and you know, insane, as a comic book movie probably should be, you know. But the fact that the core of all of those movies in the first 22 of them leading up to the last Avengers movie, the core of that, the fact that it's essentially just two parallel arcs of Iron Man and Captain America, you know, Iron Man moving from selfishness to selflessness, Captain America moving from over the top selfishness to self-care, you know.
Right.
And the fact that's those character arcs, then when you look at it in a kind of macro perspective from all of those films, that they've let those character arcs play out really nicely in a very
definitely
in a way that, and this is the reason that, like, I, you know, I think that the people talk a lot about superhero fatigue and you know, like, the and all of that stuff, but I mean, I will say, I feel like the I will defend the concept of the cinematic universe just for what the new possibilities that it opens up for character development in a way that franchises really haven't had in the past, you know, as opposed to, like, you know, it used to be that you'd make a movie, you'd make a sequel, you know, maybe you'd make a trilogy. That was, like, kind of the farthest that you would go with actual strong characters. And then beyond that, if you got to 6, 7, 8, something like that, then you're getting into, like, you know, stupid Transformer franchise territory where it's like, we're not really dealing with characters here.
It's like the same plot every time.
Right. Yeah. Whereas the whole format of the cinematic universe that Marvel has kind of, like, introduced to the zeitgeist now, I think really opens up a lot of possibilities for interesting things that really can elevate this, you know, the kind of the action genre that gets very trite. It's easy to get trite. But I think that a lot of, even Marvel's not doing it great. I think nobody else is doing it well either. Like, obviously everyone wants their own cinematic universe now. You know, DC wants one, Star Wars wants one.
Because they saw the success.
The success of Marvel, but none of them are actually basing it on the character development. And I think that that's the reason that we haven't seen any other successful ones, you know? So I would actually argue that I do feel like Marvel is doing some really interesting stuff with bonding us with characters in that sense. But.
So with every person on the show, we do, like, a 60-second rapid-fire questionnaire.
Ooh.
These are, like, questions that are, like, quick and, like, this or that kind of questions.
All right. Okay. Ooh.
So, like, you got to, like, answer them. Actually, we're going to bring it down because every time I do 60 seconds, someone finishes in, like, 15. So you've got 20 seconds.
Oh, my God. I was already stressed about the 60-second thing. I got 20 seconds?
So let's turn my do not disturb off.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right.
And then we'll set a timer.
Here we go.
Here. See if you can make it.
All right.
Well, last person that did this made it in, like, 28 when I did a 30
Damn.
Seconds.
Damn. Okay. All right. We were doing 30 seconds or 20 seconds?
We'll do 30, okay. So that I give you some time to, like, think about them a little bit, even though you're not supposed to have that. But okay, here. So 0 minutes and 30 seconds. Studio Binder or Final Draft?
Final Draft.
Computer or pen and paper?
Computer, probably.
Tungsten or LED?
Oh, God. I like the look of tungsten, but I'm going to say LED.
Okay. Morning or evening?
Evening.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Well,
oh,
you made
all right.
It.
Okay.
Whew. 5 seconds left.
All right. Nice. Cool.
Should have gone with the 20.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. See, now I'm double questioning all of those answers because I think in between morning and evening, definitely, like, I feel like my favorite time is, like, if I'm able to get up in the morning. I'm not a morning person, but once I can get up and have a cup of coffee and sit down and, like, listen to music and, like, do something, you know, I've got a couple of hours where I feel, like, very productive. So that's that's probably the ideal time, actually, to be honest. So I lied. So I didn't, yeah.
Well, we've got you quoted on that one.
Right.
Okay. So what's your favorite part of screenwriting? I know that's, like, a very small, intricate detail that's like asking someone, like, what's your favorite letter, but, like, what would you say is your favorite part?
That's interesting. My favorite part of screenwriting, I like the fact that it feels like a puzzle, like the mental method of going through. And I mean, all the stuff that we were just talking about in terms of bonding with characters and structuring a plot and figuring out those decision points and those and really how to best tease out the idea that you're trying to play with, you know. I think that's the puzzle of kind of like, you know, writing stuff down on note cards and rearranging it and, you know, going like, okay, this doesn't work, this doesn't feel right, and then like finally hitting on something where you're like, oh yeah, that's it, that's the thing, that's what I'm trying to get to. You know, the fact that it feels like putting together pieces of a puzzle to eventually get to something that in theory could reach some stranger and make them feel something, like that's the thing that I think is really cool about screenwriting.
Great.
I don't know if that answers that.
Definitely answers my question. That was great. And then what's your favorite project that you've worked on and why?
Okay. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, I there are a lot of things I've worked on with my sister. My sister's also a filmmaker, and we've worked on a lot of things together, and I really enjoy that process. Because we each kind of have complementary kind of, you know, things. She's a very like she's a very writerly kind of based person, and like dialogue and character and kind of like and stuff like that. And I tend to have more of a visual bent. So then when we work together, I think we complement each other in a really nice way. So a lot of the stuff that I've worked on with her, I'm really proud of, and I really enjoy. I think there have only really been a couple of times that I've really gone full force saying like, all right, I'm going to make something that feels like it's me, you know, like that it's not me with someone else. It's like, this is it. And my thesis film Last Strike, I feel like was the closest the closest that I've gone with just going like, all right, what's a kind of movie that I could send it to someone and go like, this is who I am as a person, you know? So it's a dark comedy about a guy who has been struck by lightning 12 times, essentially figuring out what the universe is trying to tell him before the storm of the century hits, and he presumably gets killed by lightning.
Wow.
So yeah. And it's, there was something, I mean, talking about, you know, like finding something that you know you're interested in and then just kind of like teasing it out. Like with that, it was, you know, it was literally just like my then girlfriend was, when I first started writing in like 2011 or something, my then girlfriend was in a plane that got struck by lightning. And my initial thought was like, what did you do? Like, why did you piss God off? Like, what happened? Like, why'd your plane get struck by lightning? It's such a crazy thing. And then I just kind of, there was something about that question that I really liked. And I was like, if you get like, you know, cause there are people who've been struck by lightning 5-6 times.
Right.
And like, at what point in those lightning strikes do you start to go like, what am I doing wrong? Like there's this thing that should never happen to anyone that's happened to me several times. Like, you know, what is happening in my life to lead this to me? And I think it, so there was something about that I liked, that then I liked the idea of teasing that out, because then I also like, I don't know, I grew up Unitarian in a very religious area, or a, you know, relatively Christian area, so I always had a lot of questions about like being very unclear about kind of like religion and stuff in general, and it's something that I find very fascinating now, and something I like to explore a lot, and I like the idea of using that, the concept of the universe as this kind of like balancing force, the kind of thing that like, if you know, if it needs to guide you in a certain direction, we'll just fucking hit you with lightning,
right?
You know, like that idea of this kind of like, maybe not a conscious God or anything, but like the idea that like there's some sort of balance in the universe, and I there was something I liked about that, especially, and I eventually was making it in the final draft of it that we ended up shooting. I was writing in 2016 when, like, you know, the world was going crazy and Donald Trump got elected,
right,
and my brother-in-law had a heart attack and I turned 30, you know, it was just like, it was all kinds
crazy
of things
year,
going
yeah.
on. Yeah. And I was just like, I need to know that there's a structure in my life. It was a very long way of saying that film, visually, story-wise, character-wise, tone-wise, that feels like the thing that feels the closest to me of anything
right.
that I've worked on.
Awesome. Could you explain to me in like 20 seconds, because this is one thing I don't know. Can you and probably the listeners don't know either. What is a thesis film?
I mean, it was basically just, I was in film school, okay. And it was my final.
So it's like a project.
Yeah, okay. Basically. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so we have like 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I think this might be really cool to try to do in 6 minutes.
Okay.
It's very hard.
All right. This is the big question.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we did a workshop the other day. You did a workshop and I attended the workshop. And we basically tried to write a screenplay in like 80 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see if you could walk me through your process of how you write a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And we've only got 6 minutes.
Cool. Great. All right. How did I like the fact that it started out as a, yeah, how of doing a workshop of writing a screenplay in 80 minutes, which sounded insane. And
right.
Then now how to write a screenplay in 6 minutes. I love it. It's getting, yeah, let's do it. All right. How to write a screenplay in 6 minutes. Yeah, well, so, I mean, the kind of, like, the core of that workshop, the reason that I decided to kind of just do it that way rather than just having a, you know, a lecture on character or something like that, or a couple of exercises or something like that, was that I feel like the process of writing a screenplay teaches you how to write a screenplay. You know, and 90% of writing is just writing. It's just putting stuff down on paper. And then, you know, Ira Glass has a quote where he talks about how, like, you know, the more that you write, the closer you'll get to the thing that you're trying to do, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. But yeah, I mean, I think the process of writing a screenplay, I mean, it can start from anywhere, obviously, you know, like it can start from a something you see in the newspaper, an idea, an image, you know, like I know Terry Gilliam said that his inspiration for Brazil was just, he had this image in his head of someone sitting on a coal blackened beach, with an old, like radio with like Caribbean music coming through on a bad channel, you know, through static. Not something that made it into the final film in any fashion, but that was where it started, and then it kind of morphed into this dystopia film. So obviously it can start with a lot of things. I mean, in my mind, I think starting with character, always feels useful to me. And that was kind of how I structured that workshop, was saying, all right, so any story should have, the character should be inextricable from the plot. You know, if you take the character and move it to a different plot, it becomes a different story. So essentially, I mean, I feel like the process of writing screenplay, in my mind, the way that I kind of like to do it is starting with a character that you're interested in, figuring out kind of who that person is, and then figuring out what you want to explore with that, you know. And it might come that, like, you have an idea that you're like, I want to explore this theme or this idea, and what's the best character that fits that, and then work out from there. But then the process of structuring the actual film is then just, it's essentially just saying, like, okay, how are we going to test this character? You know, we're going to create bigger and bigger decision points that are going to, number one, teach us who this character is based on how they respond to whatever's going on. And then we're going to show the way that those decision points change over time. Then that creates a character arc. And that hopefully through that process, which sounds, it sounds very reductive, or it sounds very like by the books when I say it like that. But I think that the thing that I like about it is the fact that the reason that it, all story essentially functions like that, whether you want it to or not, because that's the way that we as humans bond with people. That's the way that we as humans understand other people, is by watching them. You know, if you go on a date with someone and the waiter brings out, you know, and they say no mustard on the burger, and then the waiter brings out mustard on the burger, you know, like, how does that person react?
Right.
You know, like, do they yell at the waiter? Do they politely say it, you know, and say like, hey, sorry, I asked for no mustard. Do they eat it anyway and not say anything? Do they do a song and dance? You know, whatever. Like that's the way that we get to know people, you know, is by putting them in situations where they're tested in some way, and then seeing like, oh, okay, what are you going to do? And I think that's the fun thing about this, is creating then a structure based entirely around that, you know? So it's not like structure is something that you're imposing on it. You know, the character creates the structure just by the situations that you put them in to play out the story that you want to tell, you know? So in theory, it should all come organically from character. So that's why I like to start with that. I feel like I started rambling. Yeah. I mean, that's the, how much more time do I have in
1 minute.
6 minutes? Oh, I got 1 minute left. Okay. All right. Yeah. Did that answer it, or?
I think it does. You like structure everything around a character.
Cool. Right. Yeah. And also, yeah. And I think a thing, if it's not clear from the number of times in this podcast that I've gone back and rephrased things and been like, I don't know what I'm saying. I feel like a healthy dose of insecurity is good for writers. I think I've got a fair amount of it. You should be double questioning yourself. But also, the crazy thing is that like there are a lot of very overly confident people being very successful in the film industry who you know, maybe should have more insecurity, you know.
Right,
so there's like there's a balance,
it's a like fine line between the two.
Yeah, I think I definitely question myself probably more than I should a lot of the time. And I definitely struggle with finding that balance of saying like, you know, oh no, I'm like I do kind of know what I'm doing, you know, like I have a basic concept of these things, so like I'm not the worst writer in the world, you know. But it's a but yeah, I mean, I think that like, if you don't have insecurities, what are you writing about? I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but yeah, it feels like there's that. I mean, that those questions, the self-doubt and everything, I think that's what makes us better people in a sense. You know, if you, as long as you're willing to engage with that. I think a lot of the big problems in the world right now are people who don't think about stuff like that, who don't self-reflect. And I think that screenwriting helps you to do that. It's the cheapest form of therapy, you know, like it's good screenwriting is self-reflection. And that's going back to the original question of how do you bond your audience with the protagonist? That's it. You know, if you self-reflect and you write something that means something to you, it will connect to someone else because somebody else has felt that same thing.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. Zan's, I think, is there a link to your film online?
There is a couple. We've got a couple of things online.
Okay.
You mean Last Strike?
Last Strike.
That one's not. The trailer's online, but the full thing isn't online yet.
Well, Zan's info will be in the description, so you guys can check it out. Yeah, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Alex. This was awesome.
So interesting. You've got to bike really fast.
Oh, yeah. I got to go.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
See ya.
Cool.